65,498 square miles. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get to it. This is Spanning the State, and here are your hosts, Kristen Bry and Brian Noonan.
Good afternoon. Happy first day of March Madness.
Now,
Brian,
should you be singing the Wisconsin fight song at this point?
No, I'll save it. I will. I am decked out. We had our most of our office today is in their college gear.
Yes.
And I joked because Mike's at home. We put Frankie in her little toddler badger sportsman jacket, or Letterman jacket, and then Mike's had a Wisconsin thing on. I had my dad's jersey on today.
Nice.
And then I looked at it, I was like, well, none of us actually graduated from UW-Madison, but we are still at heart Badgers, right?
Right, exactly. You have more of a tie probably than a lot of people who went there, so you have every right to fly the flag.
Absolutely. And a big happy birthday to my dad.
Yeah.
His 70th birthday today.
Wow.
And born at the right time of year, because no one loves college basketball more than Pete Bry.
That's excellent. So now will he be glued to the TV throughout the tournament?
Yes.
Every game?
Well,
it doesn't
it's interesting
matter.
Because my parents are moving right now, so I think my mom's just giving him tasks that he can do in front of the TV.
That's good.
Like sorting stuff so he doesn't actually have to get up. But yes, so he is definitely the watching the Badger game right now. The Badgers are up. They are playing. I was thinking about this. Someone made the point of the fact that they have to play in altitude.
Yes.
And they're playing a team that, you know, Montana, much lower seed, but still plays in higher altitude than we're used to playing in. And have you ever tried to work out in altitude?
I've done a lot of stuff at high altitude. Not the highest, the most memorable, I was on stage in Colorado Springs. And my nose just started bleeding. And everybody in the audience is laughing, and I'm freaking out. I'm like, oh my God, I'm having a hemorrhage. And they're like, you're much higher. You're in the altitude.
Oh, they're laughing because
they're
laughing
knew. Because they know why I'm bleeding.
Did you stay on stage? Did the show go on?
Oh, yeah.
You just held
your
nose?
I sucked it up. I just, you know, I'm not, people pay to come see
me. No,
you.
I know.
I'm
but
not
how did,
let
so
them down.
Did you, because remember a little while ago when my nose started bleeding in the middle of the show, and I was like, you got it. I'll be right back.
I just jammed some
tissue,
some tissue up there and kept going. Yeah, show must go on.
All right. Well, this is one of my favorite weekends of the
first weekend.
Yeah, because I feel like there is something about the access that March Madness and the NCAA tournament gives to people who don't even follow sports that much, because the bracket. So many people win pools who know nothing about basketball
just
wild guesses, right? And so, like, I picked the colors I like, the mascots I like, and it's like, oh, you won, okay. And I just, the randomness of it all, and the underdog, you've never heard of this school before, then all of a sudden they're your favorite team. It's a very fun.
It is
weekends.
A lot of fun. I will give Greg Magic, who's sitting here, a little credit. He was doing something yesterday or the day before, a little social media post. You were outside taping something, and as I walked by, you gave your prediction that Florida was going to win it all.
Oh.
Yeah.
So that was the only pick I took from somebody outside of me going, so I picked Florida to win it all based on your recommendation.
Watch them knock it out of the first round.
Yeah, they're going to be done.
Exactly.
They're
no pressure.
Completely out of it.
One other key and interesting nugget, there's 22 former WIAA state basketball players.
That is, I did not
they
know.
They played high school basketball in Wisconsin who are playing in this year's tournament, including a player on Montana's team who played at Racine Case.
So, did you guys interview his? I know that some of the shows were trying to get their his parents on to talk a little bit.
Amari Jedkins. I talked to him a couple hours ago. I wanted to talk to him at about 12:15. He said, I'm going to be on the court. I said, okay, we won't bother you then.
You're trying to ice him?
Exactly. But Tom Knipple stars at Duke, and he, of course, played at Wisconsin Lutheran High School, State Player of the Year. So a lot of state flavor in the tournament, including a player who played at Pewaukee, who now plays at Iowa State, who will be playing in Milwaukee tomorrow.
Who was the breakout star last year who had like who was from Wisconsin and he had one of those best games of his life?
Oh, Jack Golke from Oakland. He just started heaving up threes.
Yes. He was
crazy.
Who did they knock out?
I forget who they knocked out.
They knocked out the number one seed, right?
I don't know why Virginia comes to my mind. They all seem to get beat. But yes, they were a Horizon League team, Oakland. They got in by beating Wisconsin-Milwaukee in the championship game.
Yeah.
And then they go on this heater, and he becomes like a storyline because he knocks down like 8 threes in a game, and he's just a dude from Pewaukee, right? I love stories like
that. See, that's what I feel like this tournament is all about, is just stories and people who have such a huge career high
right.
and come out of nowhere and you root for people. And it's just, it's like the purest form of sports, I think.
Well, any time you can watch, you know, I know the NIL is a big debate, but this is pure sports. These are kids who are playing for their school. At least in my mind, there's still that school spirit. You look in the stands, it's a lot of students in there and they're cheering for their team and there's that whole pride thing and it's great. And even if, like this year, SIU didn't make it, they've been in the tournament a number of times since I went there, and it's, that adds that extra bonus. But just sitting and watching all the people upstairs, whether they're Badger fans or Marquette fans, got a lot of Purdue people up there today who are hanging on the edge of their seat because that game is pretty close. It's just fun.
It is fun.
And this year I didn't listen to any experts except for Greg for the one pick. Everything else I did myself.
I don't know if I'm an expert when it comes to the tournament, right? I mean, yeah. My daughter picked the first ever 16 to upset a one.
Wow.
Because she liked the retriever mascot for Maryland Baltimore County
yes.
more than Virginia's mascot.
All right.
She's an oracle.
Nobody else picked that, right?
Nobody.
Yeah. Just, that's how it works in the tournament.
It is fun,
that's
though.
The beauty of it.
It is fun. All right, well, it is about 30 seconds until halftime for the Badgers. They are up 10, 40 to 32. But when we come back, we talked yesterday about how we wanted there to be a debate uh-huh. between Brittany Kinzer and Jill Underle, and It wasn't exactly a debate yesterday.
No.
It was a Zoom-hosted forum that got a little heated. So when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the takeaways from that yesterday. Stay with us on Spanning the State.
It's Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I'm Kristen Bry. And yesterday we were talking about how we were discussing whether or
yes.
not it would be worth it for the two candidates for the superintendent of public instruction to debate. And they didn't have a debate, per
no.
se, but this is the closest thing we were going to get to it. And so they had a forum yesterday that was over Zoom, which was kind of weird. But
yeah, what
it was
is
like
this, 2000?
Yeah, it was in 2020. Yeah. And it was over an hour long, and it was hosted by the Wisconsin Public Education Network, the NAACP, Wisconsin State Council of Branches, the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin, and Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed. And it got, similar to the Supreme Court debate,
yes.
it got a little spicy.
Some testiness from the ladies.
And so, was there things from there? Because what did you want to hear when we were talking about it yesterday that you thought it was important for them to be able to talk openly about?
I wanted to know how Jill Underle justified changing the test scores and what was going to be done.
Which they did not.
No.
I don't know why they didn't bring it up, but they did not bring it up.
I found it interesting. I felt good this morning that both you and I were surprised by this, because of this happening. Because as of yesterday,
it
wasn't.
Happened. I guess I didn't realize it was happening like the day that we were actually talking about it,
though. Yeah. Well, there was supposed to be something with Brittany Kinzer at Marquette. It was just a little thing. I don't know when they got Jill Underle involved in this forum, because these are the moderators that she wanted. Because when we talked about it yesterday, we mentioned that she didn't want to do anything that was moderated by journalists or, you know, reporters. So she got this one. So, yeah, I was surprised that they didn't talk about that. That seems to be the biggest thing. I know we talked about trying to make it more than just public schools versus school choice. Brittany Kinzer really bristling when she was labeled as just the school choice candidate.
And I don't know how else you because how else do you differentiate? Like, how does she want to differentiate herself?
I don't know.
I mean, I know that, you know, she keeps bringing up this stat as far as 3 in 10 Wisconsin kids are college or career ready. And that was addressed yesterday. And Underle's reaction was basically, she's like, the fact that she keeps using this stat, quote, "I don't believe she fully understands how public schools
yeah.
work in Wisconsin." But the claim comes from 2022 Nation Reports card testing data, but it's looking at 4th and 8th graders, which is not quite college ready.
I have never met a 4th grader who was ready to go to college.
I'm sure they exist. Sometimes you meet those kids, you're like, hey, you went to college at how old?
Yeah.
Doogie? Let's, yeah. But it's interesting because she did emphasize, Kinzer did emphasize, she's like, charter schools are public schools.
Yes.
Which they are.
Sure.
And she said, I've never worked for a private religious school. I'm not a privatizer, and that claim is patently false. She did help lobby for the bill that Evers did sign last year that gave more money to for voucher payments. And I just, I have such a hard time with this topic because it's like, I want public schools to work.
Right. Well, I think everybody would like that in an ideal world.
But it's also until they do work, especially in a place like Milwaukee, who am I to say, just because you don't have the resources to pay for private school, that you shouldn't have the right to go to a better school? And so that's where it's like this like chicken or the egg thing of, can you get public schools to be better while we're funding two different school systems? But also, how do you make, you know, certain kids go to schools that are ostensibly failing?
Right. And I don't think to answer the first part of your question, I don't think you can do both effectively. You could do both, obviously, fund them both, but a lot of parents, you only have so many years that your kids are in school.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm fortunate enough to be in a position where I could send my kids to private school and I still want to live in Milwaukee proper, I don't have 8 years to wait for the school district to turn around. I don't have that much time. My kid needs to go to a good school right now. And I don't think the people who are in that position are necessarily happy that other kids don't get to go to a better school.
Oh,
it's just the breaks of the game that this is how it goes. So we do need to focus on the bigger picture of getting the public schools up to par, because then whenever that gets done, then you are going to, some of these people will, who's, you know, maybe then they have a younger kid. Maybe that kid then goes to public school instead of private
school. Not if they've already moved to the suburbs, though.
Well, no, but if they're still in the city.
They're still in the city.
You know, it's...
Well, one thing they both do agree on is that the school funding formula is broken.
Okay.
And I think, I don't know what the holdup is of how we can actually, like, as a country, not even just as a state, but I think having schools be funded by property taxes has proven to be not the best formula as far as trying to get an equitable outcome for kids, because it's just proven that poor communities and schools that are in poorer areas test worse.
Right. And it would be interesting to see if we did away with some of this testing, because there's so many tests throughout the year. I mean, when I was in school, and I don't know when you were in school, there was like one big test in the spring. That was it. For us, it was the Iowa Basic Skills Test. And you would know it was coming in like March or April, and that was the test. And so the week before, it'd be stressful, and the teachers would be giving you a little refresher. But now there's tests like every couple months.
Is there?
Yeah. And the kids and teachers complain about it all the time. You got to just teach. You got to don't teach to the test. Don't teach for a test. Teach. And then also, you know, because there's kids who may be smart but don't test well, and now all of a sudden they're pigeonholed. They're moved into a different lane. It just.
Well, how do you think we should judge schools then?
I think we should judge them by test scores, but you can't test all the time. You got to have one big test.
Okay.
And you do the one test in the spring, and then you look at year to year. You look at year to year progress of these kids. If I take a test at the end of third grade, now I've gotten to the end of fourth grade, or even if you do it in the middle of the year, right before Christmas break or right after, and you go, okay, from at spring in third grade, I was reading at a fourth grade level. Now it's early winter, I'm in fourth grade. Now I'm reading at a third grade, or I've stayed at a fourth grade level. Okay, we know where to go with these kids. Rather than, you're not going to see progress in a couple of months in a test. If I test in September, there's a good chance when I test in November, I'm going to be at the same place. Now, does that mean I haven't learned anything? Does that mean the school is failing? No, it just means it takes me a little longer to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
So I would cut back on the amount of testing. And then you do have to look at some different numbers. You have to go in and go, all right, historically, where did this school fall? All right, now, why? Then you have to break that down. Was it teachers? Was it the curriculum? Was it the you know, the materials that the kids have. Is it an outside issue where you've got a lot of kids coming in who maybe have English as a second language? Well, they're always going to test lower. So you've got, there's so many factors other than a test score. A test score is easy. Mm-hmm. It's a, it, almost a cop-out for judging where the money goes.
But that's how much more qualitative data can you do on a large scale? I mean, there's 421 school districts just in Wisconsin, and we're like a mid-sized state. Mm-hmm. And so, like, how do you actually do that?
You can't.
At scale.
It's the, it, unfortunately, it is the quickest way to do it. It's, but there, smarter people than me could come up with a better solution if they wanted to. You know, I'm, I know what I've seen in the classroom. I know what I've seen in the schools, but there's people who could think these big picture things and say, all right, yes, test scores are always going to be part of it. That's okay. But they can't be the be all end all of where you get the funding.
Okay.
That's just, that's my, they also, you know, they were talk, the big thing we talk about all the time is teacher shortages.
Yeah.
Teacher shortages. Well, we'll tell you what Brittany and Jill at Kinzer and Underly said about that when we come back. It's Spanning the State. It's, I'm sorry, it's Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I am Kristen Bry. And just to put a button on the end of this conversation, we all know that one of our bigger challenges when it comes to education is a teacher shortage. And Kinzer's solutions included smoothing the licensing process, creating alternative education pathways and teacher apprenticeship programs. And Underly said paying teachers, paying them more, would definitely make the biggest difference in making the profession more attractive. She also said investing in teacher mentors, paying student teachers, and creating teacher apprenticeship programs.
So both like the apprenticeship program, which we talked about last year and I thought was a fantastic idea.
I do think it's a really good idea.
You know,
so
lot of suggestions from Jill Underly that beg the question, where's the money?
Where is the money? All right, ABC News and local headlines are next.
Welcome back. It's Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I'm Kristen Bry. And did you know that it's Sunshine Week, Brian?
Not based on what I saw outside my house this morning.
Yes, it is not the week that we all dance and like hope for spring to come faster to pray to the sun. It is a nonpartisan collaboration among groups in the journalism, civic, education, government, and private sectors that shines a light on the importance of public records and open government. So it's the 20th anniversary. And yesterday and today in Washington, D.C., there is Sunshine Fest.
Oh, wow. I'm sure that'll be well received.
But locally, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has been doing a lot more as far as not only journalists' right to government records, but our rights as citizens. So Ashley Lutheran, investigative reporter from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, joins us now to talk all about your mainstay in your line of work is requesting information. So I guess just off the bat, like what should we know about what is actually available to us and why is it important that it's available to us?
Well, thanks for talking about Sunshine Week and public records. I think, there's so much that, first of all, this information is your information. As a citizen, taxpayer, you have a right to know what your government is doing. You have a right to know what actions are being taken in your neighborhoods, what new business is coming in, what's going on with that, perhaps a nuisance property down the block. Why were the police at that one location 2 weeks ago? These are anything that a government agency, a government official, anything that they're doing, their work is supposed to be public. And so there are public records created with it. It could be emails. It could be text of legislation, could be policies. Lots of different things are public records.
Got it.
We'll talk about private citizens in a minute. But in your role as a journalist, not that you're not a public citizen or private citizen, how logistically does it work? Do you go in and there's got to be thousands and millions sometimes of records? How do you even like sift through those to find what you need, and what requests do you have to make? Who do you have to deal with?
Really, any kind of government agency, you know, we could go to for public records. So my colleagues, there was some great examples over the weekend and this week that were a listing of stories that we've done based off of public records. So for example, some of the Hackam reporting, the housing authority reporting, that was the information about a federal audit raising concerns about the housing authority. That was an audit that was received by one of our reporters in response to a public records request she had made to the federal, I believe it was the HUD, Federal Housing and Development Authority. And so on my day-to-day, our day-to-day, we are constantly requesting records from places like police agencies, court documents, records from the medical examiner. My colleagues in the business section, they are always looking at things like permitting and, you know, the department, state agencies. I mean, really, it's sort of, it can be overwhelming when you think about it.
And so is really the process of, is it finding the right person at any agency that you need to request it from? Is there, is all these agency websites supposed to have a place where you request it? Like, where, like, knowing even the department you're looking at, because obviously as a journalist you have to do this all the time, but it, like, because I honestly wouldn't even know where to begin if I had to go request something.
It's hard to know. So if there's an example, maybe we could talk through it.
Okay.
Maybe that would be helpful if there's something you're curious about. You know, a lot of state agencies and local agencies have gotten better about providing kind of aggregate data online. So for example, the State Department of Health Services, they'll provide a lot of different dashboards. We saw this both at the county level and state level when it came to COVID, for example.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So all of those kinds of things are public records. And sort of the big legal entity responsible for giving some guidance about how local government should handle open meetings law, public records, would be the Attorney General and the Department of Justice. They have an open, I believe it's the Office of Open Government. And so sometimes when you run into trouble there, you know, you might appeal there, ask them for guidance. But they sort of are the clearinghouse, legally speaking, about, hey, is this record public? Is it not? Or is the reason for denying this record valid or not? They give guidance and that sort of thing.
Is that also who gives out the awards? Isn't there awards for, like, certain public servants who are, like, have the best open records record versus the worst?
Are you talking about the prestigious OPs?
Yes! Who gives those out?
That would be, oh, I don't want to butcher this, but it's the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, which is, I believe, a nonprofit group. Yes, open government. Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, I'm sure people listening are thinking, well, sure, journalists need to get to open records. Why do regular citizens need to have access to these kind of public records?
Oh, it's just, again, it's really important so that you can, I mean, people want to know what's going on in their community.
Sure.
And public records are a really great way to figure that out. If your neighbor doesn't know exactly what's going on, you could look up a permit, for example. So we were chatting before we went on air about the city of Milwaukee's e-notify system.
Yes, which surprised you.
Which I did not know that was a thing. I didn't know that I could go sign up for this.
Yes, you can absolutely sign up for it. And so if you're a resident of the city of Milwaukee, I highly recommend checking out e-notify. I think if you just Google, you know, city of Milwaukee e-notify, it'll give you a whole menu of public notices that you can sign up for by aldermanic district, kind of by police district too. And so you can sign up for it to get reminders for when you should put your garbage and recycling out. You could sign up for it to get reminders or to get notification when someone pulls a new tavern license in your neighborhood. Also, if you want to follow specific public meetings, you know, the Common Council has lots of different committees. If you want to particularly pay attention to, for example, public safety and health, because you're concerned about what's going on with lead levels at MPS schools and you want to know what the health department's going to say, maybe you sign up for an e-notify so you can see the agendas for those meetings.
That's really smart. So one of the things that Journal Sentinel is doing right now, you've already done a couple?
Just one, we have a couple more scheduled.
is going to different resident groups meetings and doing trainings on open records. So how did the first one go?
Our first visit was with Amani United. They were so, I was so happy that they were able to, you know, that they wanted to hear what we had to share about public records. And essentially we go through, you know, what is a public record? What is not a public record? What information might be withheld? What can you find pretty easily? Some of the stuff we've been talking about, right? You know, some of these resources where you have a question, you might be able to get it without, you know, sending an email with a formal request. And so we're going to go back in April, coming up very soon, for a part two of that session. We're going to help residents find the information that they want or submit a request if it's a special kind of thing where they need to actually do that. And then we're lined up to visit with Clark Square and I think also Metcalf as well.
Nice.
So what does differentiate between what is a public record and what is not?
So some information is not considered a public record, and it might be things that wouldn't make sense to you know, medical information, for example, okay. that's going to be withheld.
Yeah.
Private information. So, for example, a common records request is salary data for city employees or county employees or state employees. You absolutely have a right to that information. You don't have a right to, you know, aggregate information about all those employees, like their addresses, obviously.
Okay. Sure.
And then in the trainings, we talk a lot about making requests for specifics, not just information. You want to request a specific record. So you wouldn't file a records request saying, how much does the mayor of Milwaukee make in a year? You would file a records request that's, you know, for example, please provide any documents stating the salary of Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson for 2024, 2023, and 2022, or whatever years you wanted, right? You want to be narrow, specific, and not ask for general information. That's like one of the things we talk through.
So is one of the things that is open record is any of our elected officials' work emails?
Yes. Yes, and that is
what
something
about text messages?
Text messages as well, yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
And yeah. so we had some residents ask Adamani, you know, why would I want to know that? And or why would I care, basically? And it's like, well, for example, if they're voting on a piece of legislation and you want to know what and they're saying, oh, my constituents were overwhelmingly against this. So I voted no. And you request all the emails about that topic and you see, actually, it was the other way. You know, that's important information to know. Or you see that, in fact, yes, they got all of this feedback and that did, you know, they did vote the way their constituents communicated with them.
So for just to be, because you said you had to be very specific, would you have to be requesting for a specific day or a specific set of dates when you're like, I want to see all the emails they got at this time?
One of the big reasons records requests are initially denied is because they're considered overly broad. So you do want to be specific. It helps if you narrow a time frame. When you're making a request for emails, it helps if you provide keywords as well. Okay. And maybe to or from kind of information, you know. So if you want discussions among council members, if you want emails sent to a specific council member, that kind of thing.
And if they deny your request, can you resubmit? Just making it narrower and more focused, like you said?
Yes, typically. So one of the things that we always, as journalists, always do is we ask for, if you're withholding any of these records, please cite the law, the part of the law that is justifying this denial or this withholding, okay. even if it's just part of the request being withheld. And so you can certainly look at that and refine your request. If it's overly broad, you could try to make it more narrow. Sometimes it will be the kind of thing where we're not releasing this information because it's part of an ongoing investigation. That's quite common in police records,
okay.
for example. So in that case, you may have to wait.
Got it. All right. Well, where can people get more information on upcoming trainings or any other resources that Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is making available?
So I think if people just search JS Online Sunshine Week, they'll find my editor's column. But people can also, if they're interested in, if they have a resident group or an organization they are interested in learning more, they could certainly email me.
Perfect.
Which fascinating.
Ashley.Lutheran@JRN.com.
All right. Ashley Lutheran, thank you so much and happy Sunshine Week.
Thank you.
Always good to see you, Ashley. Thanks.
All right. We'll be back in a minute.
Why do I have a feeling that what we're doing is happening in offices across the country as we're in the breaks? All we're doing is focusing on
the TV.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, certainly upstairs. It'll be interesting to see how much work actually gets done tomorrow for some of our teammates as far as being all in on
Well, they were hardcore for today. There was the area with the four TV screens is completely packed.
People were in there. People were watching. The Badgers are still up.
56-47.
With a little over 13 minutes to go in the game. Very exciting. But this story has nothing to do with Wisconsin.
No, but it has to do with influencers, and you love influencers.
I don't know if I love influencers.
Would you consider yourself an influencer?
No,
all right.
Absolutely not.
Listen,
I don't love that term.
I don't know wasn't that part of the deal when you went to the conventions? Were you under content creator / influencer?
But I don't know if those are the same thing.
Oh.
Someone who makes content and puts it on the internet. Influencer is someone who has influence. I don't know if I have influence. I don't know if anyone's doing anything because I told them to. Anyways, so this takes place in Australia. And it's just one of those stories. I was like, what were you thinking? So I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but an influencer, it's a U.S. influencer who I guess is a wildlife biologist from Montana, which makes this even more outrageous as far as someone who studies and is
works with wildlife would ever think that this was like a cool thing to do.
And so, now makes you want the Badgers to win even more.
Yeah. And so I guess her real name is Samantha Strable, but online she goes by Sam Jones. And she was in Australia, and she posted a video of her picking up a baby wombat. And then in the video, you can see the wombat's mom,
yeah,
very distressed,
right,
very worried. And, you know, she put him back, and, like, neither animal was hurt. But the entire continent of Australia was up in arms over this.
They don't play. They're going to boot her like they did Bart Simpson.
And they wanted to boot her out. And now there's been an update that apparently, this isn't a very good friend, because her friend, the influencer's friend, gave these like screenshots of their text messages to the Daily Mail.
Oh, man.
But apparently, Ms. Strable is now hiding out in Thailand with her Australian boyfriend.
Wow.
And, you know, and it's pretty, she's like, I guess she was saying that she doesn't understand why she's getting so much flack for this.
Really? You obviously caused distress to the mother of a baby animal. You should know better. It's one of these things. I love when people try to pretend that wild animals are their pets. I live for the bison goring somebody who needed a
selfie. You live for it?
I live for it. I cannot be happier, because if you go up to a buffalo thinking, oh, don't they look fluffy and fun, and that buffalo gores you, that's what a buffalo is supposed to do.
So how do you feel about people who go on safari? I think you're also playing with fire. Like, well, you're in their territory. Well,
you are playing with fire, but two of my brothers went on a safari.
Okay.
And they were in the car, the Jeep or whatever. They stayed.
You stay, you know, in the Jeep.
They have the guide, and you're kind of just there observing. I think observing is
fine. But
there's those
videos all the time. Not all the time, but there's every once in a while.
Well,
an
sure.
An animal comes up to that Jeep and is like, what's going on over here?
Oh, I know. And that's, you know, if you're driving through, Rhea was just down in the Smoky Mountains. Sometimes those bears wander right up to the car window.
Like, what kind of food do you got?
I'd panic,
buddy.
But I'm not going to reach out and go, oh, look at the pretty bear.
Exactly.
Look at the pretty bear.
All right. Well, when we come back, we will spin around the state on Spanning the State.